What is up, everybody? Welcome to another episode of Locked on Vikings. I'm your host, I'm your pal, I'm the kid you copied off in math class. My name is Luke Braun. You can find me on Twitter at LukeBraunNFL. You can find the show on Twitter at Locked on Vikings. And that's especially important for episodes like today's. If you are not following, you missed out on the chance to ask some mailbag questions. We're going to answer those for most of the show. So if you want to ask some questions for next time, make sure you give those Twitter accounts a follow and keep an eye out for when we ask you about stuff. That's Locked on Vikings for the show, and that's Luke Braun NFL for me. So elsewhere in the world of housekeeping, you can always find the show on iTunes, Spotify, Podbean, Stitcher, wherever you usually find podcasts. Just look for Locked on Vikings. You'll find this. You can also just ask your smart speaker if you don't feel like getting up or pulling out your phone or whatever. Or if you're in your car and you should not be looking at your phone at all, just ask your smart device to play podcast Locked on Vikings. It'll take you right to the most recent episode. Make sure you check all that stuff out. Also, the pain bracket is in its finals. We're going to let this go for 2 days. We're going to wrap it up after I'm finished recording tomorrow's episode, which means we won't actually talk about the results until next week. But do go vote in the finals. Which one hurts more to think about, 1998 or 2009? It's the ultimate Vikings question. We all knew it was coming down to this, but the Gary Anderson miss against Atlanta, sending them to get absolutely ground into dust by the Broncos in the Super Bowl, or the 2009 Brett Favre across his body, bounty gate, poorly officiated game, where the Saints then went on to beat Peyton Manning and the Colts and get their only Super Bowl title. Which one hurts more to think about? Go vote. The link, as always, is in the show notes to that Twitter poll. Go check it out, and we'll see what ends up being the worst memory of current Vikings fans. So with all that stuff out of the way, let's talk about the main topics for the show. So I asked you earlier on Tuesday, today while I'm recording this, I asked you what you want to hear about the Antonio Brown trade situation, maybe like what would a possible trade look like, or just a generic mailbag, ask me anything. And the results were like almost down the middle, 50-50. So I figured, eh, screw it, let's just cram both into the show. So I am going to quickly talk about the Antonio Brown stuff. There isn't really a lot of news. Adam Thielen's agent has been kind of speaking up about trying to get a new contract. He's just doing his job. So we can kind of talk about more crazy, stupid, wild hypothetical. So let's talk about Antonio Brown's like trade situation. And Odell Beckham Jr. is now kind of in this same category where his team is like shopping him around kind of due to maybe attitude issues or maybe just cap issues or whatever. But if you're like me and you just think that the key to building a good team is putting good players on it and everything else is overthinking it, then this might be interesting to you, right? So let's see, like, but what would it take, right? Because the first thought that I'm sure all of you have when you're asked, all right, should the Vikings trade for Antonio Brown? Your first thought is that would never work out because A, he's way too expensive, and B, there's not really room on the roster. Well, we actually talked a little bit over the last couple shows about why that wouldn't really hurt the roster. I don't think like, oh, there's Diggs and Thielen, there's no room for another good wide receiver. That's kind of nonsense. We talked a lot about it when we were talking about skill, other skill players and other like free agent wide receivers. But essentially, you know, you have to have three wide receivers on the field for like most of your plays. You have to have five skill players. And right now the Vikings are frequently having that guy be like Tyler Conklin or Laquon Treadwell. You can improve greatly on that. But that second question, the cap question and the compensation question and all that, that's really difficult to do, right? So let's just look at like what the Vikings would have to accomplish to acquire Antonio Brown and like what the cost would be otherwise, right? Because there's always opportunity cost. And I might do a whole episode on opportunity cost in football because it's another like important economic concept. But basically the idea is that if you spend money on one thing, that's money that you now can no longer spend on other things. If I buy a car, I now can't buy jewelry with that money. I have to go find other money to buy jewelry, right? Same thing. If I go buy Antonio Brown by trading for him and paying this big contract, that means that I can't, for example, extend Anthony Barr or Sheldon Richardson. But let's see exactly how much work it would take, exactly how much would need to be sacrificed to acquire him, because hey, maybe that's worth it, right? Maybe Antonio Brown is better for the Vikings than, say, Anthony Barr. And I'm not going to get into the evaluation of that, but hey, perhaps, right? So for the sake of the exercise, let's just assume that whatever we whatever conclusion we come to like what we have to do to get Antonio Brown, that he would be worth doing that, and let's just see where we end up. So in terms of actual trade compensation, right now the rumor coming out of Pittsburgh is that they're looking for a second round pick. So let's just say that that's the price of Antonio Brown, right? Is he worth a second round pick? I'd probably pick Antonio Brown in the second round, even though he's old. So that part's easy. It's the contract and fitting that in that takes a little bit more legwork. Now, if you remember the cap manipulation episode we did a few weeks back, we talked about a way of conserving salary cap space, which is converting a salary into a signing bonus. So the Steelers did this with Antonio Brown when they were trying to figure out their Le'Veon Bell situation, and essentially they took a big ol' cap hit and prorated it over the next 3 years. So that is money that has already been paid to Antonio Brown. He got all of that money, and then that's going to be spread across the Steelers' cap hit for the next 3 years, like $7 million a year. So that's money that can't be traded with him. Everything else, whoever trades for Antonio Brown is on the hook for that part of the contract, but the Steelers already paid that $21 million to him and therefore are responsible for that salary cap hit. And since a whole bunch of Antonio Brown's money becomes guaranteed for 2019 once the new league year turns over, the Steelers are gonna relieve a lot of that cap burden for whoever trades for Antonio Brown. Now, not all of it, right? You still do have to take some of the money in. Antonio Brown's probably going to want a new reworked contract where he's less cuttable, but that probably means a lower base salary considering his age and the situation around the league and the reports that a lot of teams see him as a headache that's going to reduce his value, whether or not it's true. So for simplicity's sake, let's call that somewhere between Adam Thielen's contract, which is like $5 or $6 million a year, and Stephon Diggs' contract, which is like $15 million a year. Say he gets about $10 million. So there's a bunch of different ways to create $10 million in cap space. Go check out the cap space clearing episode where we talked about all these different things, but you could do a whole bunch of stuff. You could cut Everson Griffin. You could cut Mike Remmers and Andrew Sandejo. That's what I did in my offseason plan. You could cut Kyle Rudolph, which I also did, although that, you know, cutting players necessitates that you replace them, so you can't just take all that money and just give it to Antonio Brown. You could convert Danielle Hunter's salary to a signing bonus, although that would carry some irony because the Steelers are in a bad situation because of that move specifically. You could do the same with Stephon Diggs and Eric Kendricks because they both have a lot of years left on their contracts, and players are usually pretty quick to agree to that because it means they get their entire year's worth of salary in their pocket right now before they even have to worry about getting cut or whatever. That level of security is really nice for players and they tend to like it. However, all of those moves were things that we did in off-season plans in past episodes to save money, and they all had something to do with extending Sheldon Richardson and or Anthony Barr. So if you do trade for Antonio Brown, you're probably kissing those dreams goodbye. But I guess that leads to an interesting question. If you had to choose between Anthony Barr, Sheldon Richardson, and Antonio Brown, who would you choose? And who would you choose if you had enough salary cap to pay two of them? It's an interesting question. Let me know your thoughts. Tweet at Luke Brown NFL or at Locked On Vikings. I look forward to hearing that. But I do have to step away for a quick ad break, and then when we come back, we will hit mailbag questions for the rest of the show. See you guys in a minute. All right, we are back. So let's get into some of your questions, and the first one that we are going to answer comes from Lord Rupert Everton on Twitter. Love that display name. Who says, any update on Easton's recovery? So there's not really ever going to be a lot of news coming out of the Vikings about this stuff. Some teams are a little bit more transparent about it than others. The Vikings tend to keep all of this stuff pretty close to the vest unless they're like mandated to reveal it, like an injury report or whatever. But the injury that Nick Easton had, which was a herniated disc, tends to be the kind of injury that you can kind of recover from over the whole course of the offseason. So I think we can expect him to be ready to go for 2019. Now that said, I believe he is a restricted free agent, so there's a chance that that's not with the Vikings. But I believe that Nick Easton should be healthy for the 2019 season. We'll keep an eye out on news and stuff. We'll obviously come on this show and talk about it if something does come out. I know that David Chow, who is kind of the quote-unquote Twitter doctor, who he chimes in all the time on injuries, and usually he's only going off of video, so he's not correct all the time, and he has kind of a checkered past with the then San Diego Chargers and all that. But for whatever he's worth, he chimed in and said, yeah, that's the kind of injury you should be fine by the start of the next season, especially since it was something that happened like before the first preseason game. So you had like the whole of the last like 4 or 5 months to recover, and then you've got like 5 or 6 months to recover before you're even called to do any more football activities, so he should be all right if the Vikings decide to retain him. Next up, we're going to take a question from Dom at Ajax Esports on Twitter, who asks, if we were to sign an FA, not on the team, free agent, not on the team, do you think Matt Paradis is a must? So I think he's a guy that makes a lot of sense. And he's probably the front runner for like a guy that the Vikings will target because he is, if you guys don't know, he's been the center for the Broncos for his whole rookie contract. So he was drafted by a Gary Kubiak, Rick Dennison, you know, Clint Kubiak led team, and that whole clan is here now. So it would make sense that there'd be a connection if the Broncos decide not to retain him. The rumor is that they are going to let him test the market, though they're keeping the door open if he wants to come back. So there's definitely a chance that the Vikings go after him. I could see them, you know, pursuing him, even though he plays center and the Vikings have Pat Elflein at center. I think Pat Elflein has proven that he doesn't really have the ability to call protections. Most of his experience at Ohio State was at guard, and he did play center very well for Ohio State in his senior year, and that's why he's played center here for the last 2 years. But in the NFL, calling protections is a lot harder than in college, and that just hasn't seemed to have translated, and Matt Paradis might actually be better at that and more familiar with the run game that Rick Dennison is going to call. So I could definitely see them kicking Elflein back to guard where he was in Ohio State. There will be a transitional cost to that. We talked about position switching on the offensive line, and I'm generally not a fan of it. But in this case, I don't think that that redundancy is a very hard one to solve. But in general, I don't think any free agent specifically is a must. You're in a bidding war. And like we talked about earlier in the week, it's an auction market and you might get outbid. Or he might just say, hey, you know, I've lived here in Denver for the last 4 years. I'm going to keep doing that. You know, I'm going to stick with this new coaching staff that came in. Maybe I'm really excited about that. Like, the decision is up to him. So calling it a must is a little strange. And honestly, as good of a fit as Matt Paradis will be, and as good of a center as he is, and he's an awesome center, you should never overpay. You should always have a limit, and if the bidding war goes beyond that limit, let him go, and you can probably find a better deal somewhere else and do that, and over the long term, you'll be building a more efficient roster. So I wouldn't call any free agent a must, but yeah, he'd be a great center, and I think the Vikings should definitely pursue him in good faith. So the next one I'm going to answer comes from Steezone999 on Twitter, who says, how many of their UFAs, unrestricted free agents, outside of Barr and Sheldon, do you see the Vikings re-signing? So I thought that was a fun question because it really gets to the depth, and I'm a sucker for all that depth. So I'm just looking at overthecap.com, and I'm looking at their list. I'm just going to run down it real quick. I don't think they're going to hang on to Latavius Murray. I do think that they'll hang on to Nick Easton. I think he's a good fit for what they're trying to do right now. Probably not Brett Jones. He didn't seem to be the kind of guy that the Vikings were interested in. I don't think they were very happy with him. Otherwise, they probably would have started him as things were going south over the course of the year. I do think they're going to hang on to Dan Bailey and Marcus Sherrills. I think they might try to hang on to Tom Johnson and Tom Compton. They'll probably let Amir Abdullah go. They'll probably let George Aloka go, considering the money that he'll probably command on in free agency. I think they'll maybe try to keep Aldrick Robinson. I'm actually on the fence about that. Anthony Harris is a restricted free agent. I think it's a no-brainer to tender him. I think they'll hang on to Trevor Siemian. I don't know if they'll hang on to Rashad Hill, but he's also a restricted free agent. And the rest of the guys on this list are guys that they'll probably try to bring into camp. CJ Ham and ERFA, they'll probably hang on to him. He's been a very good fullback for them, and everybody else is, you know, kind of camp body types or guys that were put on IR in the preseason. Next up, I'm going to take a question from Miles Gorham, a friend of mine from Climbing the Pocket, who says, what's a surprise trade you could see the Vikings making this offseason? This one was really fun, and I actually had to stop and think about it for a while, so here's what I'm going to do. I think the Vikings are going to make a trade with the Steelers. This is it. Book it. Mark it. 100%. Guaranteed. Going to do it. They're going to make a trade with the Steelers, but it's not the one you're thinking of. They are going to trade. See, the Steelers are going to need to clear a lot of cap. They're in a bad spot right now with Lev Bell and Antonio Brown, and they're going to lose all that talent. They're going to need to replace it, and then there's a bunch of dead cap on it, and they've screwed themselves with franchise tags, all kinds of weird cap maneuvering to try to hang on to all this talent, and now it's all going to flood out the door. They even have Ben Roethlisberger's contract is up for 2020. They have to think about that. So not only do they have to try to maybe clear a little bit of cap space for the coming years if they don't want to be screwed, they also have to think about acquiring new young talent, which really behooves them to maybe offload a veteran or two, even if it's a good player, in exchange for some draft capital. So the Steelers, they have a better offensive line than the Vikings. Most teams do. But the Steelers have a very good offensive line. A lot of veterans, a lot of very proven talent. Guys who are maybe up there in years who don't lend themselves to the future that the Steelers should probably start building for. But guys that can lend themselves very well to the present where the Vikings have a very immediate need. So this is why, book it, 100% guaranteed, the Vikings are going to trade a second round draft pick to the Steelers for left tackle Alejandro Villanueva. Now, he's 30, so he's up there in years. That's why it's not a first-rounder, but he's a very good left tackle, and he would improve immediately upon Riley Reiff. The Vikings would probably cut Reiff as a part of this, although they would have to get this deal done before all of Riley Reiff's base salary for 2019 becomes guaranteed, and it works out for both sides. The Vikings upgrade at the most important position on their offensive line, the Steelers clear out a whole bunch of cap, and they get extra draft capital that they can then use to try to put toward replacing a guy like Antonio Brown or Lev Bell or whatever, and they get a little bit of extra space so they can think about extending Ben Roethlisberger or using the draft capital to replace Ben Roethlisberger, but it gives them the resources to get out ahead of a bunch of issues that are going to hit the Steelers in a couple of years. Now, this is obviously not an ideal cap move for the Vikings because they have to cut Riley Reiff, who comes with like $5 million dead. We've talked a whole bunch about that contract. They do still save net money, so it doesn't hurt quite as much to do it, but it is, you know, not exactly the best salary cap move. That said, you gotta do what you gotta do. The offensive line needs fixing, and the Vikings are gonna go get aggressive. Book it. 100%, I guarantee that that is going to happen. And if I'm wrong, absolutely nothing bad will happen to me because this is a podcast, and that's how things work. So on that wonderful, sparkly note, I am gonna step away to another ad break. And when I come back, I'm gonna keep answering questions. I will see you all in a minute. Okay, we are back for the last part of this show, so I'm gonna jump right back into the questions from jmills94. On Twitter asks me, if Greedy or Ford or Oliver are available at 18, who do you take and who do the Vikings take? So I'll admit I'm still not 100% up to date on all the draft prospects, but I know that Greedy Williams is a very good cornerback. Cody Ford, I assume he's talking about, is a very good guard slash tackle in the league. And Ed Oliver is a very good edge rusher. So essentially, this is a positional value question, and it gives me a good excuse to give you kind of my philosophy on all these things. There's a really strong debate of like best player available versus need in the NFL, and I definitely fall a lot further on the best player available spectrum because I think you draft for the long term, right? You're drafting players that are going to be on your team for 4 or 5 years, and no GM plans further ahead than that anyways. So you're really planning not for this year, not for your most immediate needs, but for the needs you're going to have down the road. If you are expecting a rookie to come in and fill an immediate need, you're probably in a really bad spot as a team. That's why I think the Vikings should probably be more aggressive about offensive line and free agency and less aggressive about it in the draft. They should try to use free agency to set themselves up so that they can take the best players possible. If you look at the teams that like fall apart or decline over time, I think about like the Ravens or the Colts for a long time, or even the Packers, they really botched like 3-4 drafts in a row. And it didn't matter what positions they were botching, they were drafting bad players. And I think if you can find the best player, or just find the player that you are most certain is going to be good, and usually those two things are interchangeable, then it doesn't really matter what positions you're getting. You can solve redundancies after the fact. You can't solve, oh crap, but the player is bad. That said, you shouldn't just completely ignore need, right? If the best cornerback in the world is there, but you need a tackle, and a good tackle that will fill the need is available, like a Cody Ford, I guess in this scenario, we're all agreeing, right, that Cody Ford would fill the need. You should take the guy that, you know, helps your team more. So I think the way that most teams should do this, and the way that a lot of teams do it, is they have a board, right? And they'll rank the players by just objectively who is the best at what they do, right? Just rank them like that first, and then look at it and let need inform your board, right? Move for the Vikings. Move the linemen up a little, move the corners down a little, move the edge rushers down a little, and kind of proceed from there. And then once you've made those decisions and you've figured out your board on draft day, stick to your board. And understand that need has been baked into that, and take the player that's at the top of your board when they're available, and that's that. And then, you know, work in trades from there. So I think that if we look at all these players and put them all on the same plane, which again, I don't know if that's true. I haven't looked enough into the draft people yet because I'm more focused on free agency until that happens. I think that need would probably rise Cody Ford above the other two. But again, that comes from an assumption that they are all exactly the same talent level, which is probably not true. I do think that the Vikings would probably take Cody Ford there as well. As good as Ed Oliver and Greedy Williams are, and as much as I'm sure everybody thinks Mike Zimmer would be like throwing a temper tantrum or whatever, I think based on their past behavior and looking at how need has aligned with their drafting in the past, they kind of put it in the same category. Like if you look at the 2018 draft where they didn't take a guard at 30, I think they only had three guards with first round grades on them, and those guys went 10 picks before they even had a chance to sniff them. So I think with like Will Hernandez, who's the guy everybody complains about all the time, but Connor Williams is somebody I wanted at the time. I don't think they had first round grades on that guy, and they won't reach. But that doesn't mean that they just won't take an offensive lineman at all. It just means that they've kind of been in situations where they either had to reach on an offensive line or take a player they had a good grade on at an appropriate time, and they've always chosen the latter there. I don't think this scenario represents that. And so I think you can pretty comfortably take the lineman and feel good about it. So there's a similar question, another one from Dom at Ajax Esports on Twitter, who asks, do you think the Vikings go tight end in the first round? More specifically, Hawk. That's TJ Hawkinson. He's kind of emerging as the best tight end in the draft right now. I've seen people put TJ Hawkinson like top five on their big boards. So he might be gone well before 18. But I think if a guy like that is there, you know, like just like we talked about with those same principles, if a tight end is there and a tight end is the best player, I think the Vikings should totally go tight end there. And I think that they could. I think they're wise enough to say, all right, let's take this like amazing skill player that will essentially fill the same void we've all been talking about filling with Antonio Brown, is just we need another weapon on the field. But that said, it's not like they're going to price themselves into it, right? If there are no good linemen and there's no good tight ends on the board at number 18, or by good, I mean no guys that they have first round grades on, or guys, you know, that they have high enough grades where they can justify taking it at 18 and then they can't trade back or whatever. Yeah, they'll look and they'll see, all right, what defensive lineman's there? What linebacker's there? Maybe even what defensive back is there? It could happen. Everything is very fluid there and they kind of have to make the decision in the moment. But I guess at 18, yeah, I'm sure that they will have first round grades on tight ends. And if those tight ends that they have first round grades on happen to be the guy that is at the top of the board when they draft at 18, yeah, they'll totally go pick him. So last question I am going to do for the day comes from Drew Christensen on Twitter. Thanks for everything, bud. Who asks, talk about the leaders of the team. Who are the leaders? Who sticks out on the field and sidelines and also off the field, makes good impacts for the team as a whole? So this is a wonderful question, and I love talking about this stuff because ultimately, as much as I talk about players as assets and as like commodities to be bought and sold and traded and stuff, they're people. And they're people with personalities and stuff they do off the field. A lot of them do really cool stuff off the field. I think we got to mention Kyle Rudolph, right? You know, the constant nominee for Walter Payton Man of the Year. He is always doing awesome stuff. And I think the Vikings, comparative to the rest of the league, you know, and this is still a relatively new thing. I think a lot of us are still used to the Vikings of like the mid-2000s that were always getting in trouble. They're really good at staying out of trouble. And they seem like a really good-natured group of guys. And I get that vibe both from like their media appearances, but also just being at training camp for the first time this past summer, I just got the vibe that they're a bunch of like really goofy, happy-go-lucky dudes. And I think Kyle Rudolph, that good nature kind of rubs off on everybody because he outlasts in terms of tenure most of the team at this point. And I think that his personality kind of defines the culture of the locker room a little bit. So I definitely call him a leader. I think the goofiness, a lot of that comes from Everson Griffen. I think I'd be remiss to not name him in this. I think that he's a leader in both intensity and that kind of that go-get-em mentality, that hunger that everybody feels. I think a lot of that comes from Everson Griffen. I actually thought Sheldon Richardson came in and offered a little bit of that. I got a chance to talk to him at training camp, and you know, I got to talk to like Jalen Holmes and like the young defensive linemen, and they all said, oh yeah, Sheldon Richardson's been helping me a ton. And you know, and I was doing this wrong, and Sheldon Richardson pulled me aside and said, hey, no, you got to do it this way, and this is how coach likes it, and blah, blah, blah. And Sheldon Richardson, who had been a part of the Vikings at the time for like 2 seconds, was already being looked to, up to as a leader. I thought that was really cool. And obviously, you know, Everson Griffen's impact on the locker room cannot be understated. And I think the whole culture of that locker room really astounds me. And that was like my main impression coming away from that training camp, which was the closest I'd ever been to the team. So this is like a personal story more than anything. But every time I talked to a young player, an undrafted free agent or a rookie or even like Mike Hughes, they all said, oh yeah, so-and-so taught me this, so-and-so taught me that. And a lot of times I wasn't even asking about that. I wasn't asking like, oh, who's been working with you? I would ask like, oh, so how's training camp going? And they'd be like, yeah, you know, Xavier Rhodes has been really helpful to me. Mackenzie Alexander has been really helpful to me. And I think that culture just rubs off on everybody. I think that's kind of a holdover from Brian Robeson too. I think his impact on the locker room is still there. And then I think there's this like levity that comes from Diggs and Thielen. This like jovial, like kid-like attitude. I think Adam Thielen, he and Case Keenum kind of had similar personalities in my mind because they were both such underdog, like undrafted free agent guys that they came in and I feel like there's this like attitude about the both of them that's just like, holy crap, I'm actually in the NFL. Like, there's just this kind of bewilderment that they can't really still believe that this is happening to them. And I think Case Keenum just has that attitude, and it kind of brought that out in Thielen, and now I see that in Thielen all the time. But then just him and Diggs joking around with each other. And even, like, Riley Reiff and Danielle Hunter. I spoke with Brian O'Neill at training camp, and I was like, so who's helping you? And he said, oh, you know, like, Riley's taught me this and that, and Mike Remmers has taught me this and that. And then he said, but you know, I've learned a ton from Danielle Hunter, because he went up against Danielle Hunter a lot in drills, and Danielle Hunter, because he's Danielle Hunter, would like kick his butt up and down the field all day long, and he would learn stuff just from like failure like that. But it was also, you know, Danielle Hunter, who's a relatively young player, but he's grown up in this same culture with like Griffin and Robeson and this like you help me, I help you kind of attitude, you know, would say, hey, you know, it's harder for me if you do this. And like from his own perspective, like, hey, if you do this, I can beat you like that every time. And I think that helped Brian O'Neill like really grow up and develop. So I think they're like every veteran kind of helps the young guys all the time. And I would say that that's the characterization of the Vikings locker room. And like the most distinct thing about it to me is just how much the old guys help the young guys. And I don't think it's like that in every locker room, because I think old guys in some locker rooms feel threatened by the young guys, right? Oh, is he going to take my job? I don't think there's any of that with the Vikings. And I think guys like Terrence Newman and Brian Robeson started it. But right now, I think like Everson Griffin is carrying that torch. Adam Thielen is carrying that torch. Kyle Rudolph is carrying that torch. I should mention Harrison Smith too. Barr definitely is one of those guys. I'm not mentioning Kirk Cousins right now because he's only been with the team for a year, and I don't think the team has really taken on his like specific personality. And they did weird stuff like the dead arm dance, and that's kind of funny. But even that was like an Adam Thielen thing, and that was kind of like a troll on all of the touchdown dances, right? It was kind of this like ironic move. So perhaps in future years, once Kirk Cousins has been around a little bit longer and has kind of like won over more of the trust, and maybe the team's had more success with him, I think maybe Kirk Cousins could be like looked up to as a leader. But I don't think he's anointed with that just because he's the quarterback. I think other guys define the personality of the Vikings a little bit more, and it's just because the Vikings have kind of become who they are with these guys like, you know, Griffin and Smith and Kyle Rudolph on the roster. So I think those guys define the Vikings a little more. And on that wonderfully wholesome note, I am going to wrap up today's show. Thank you guys so much for listening. Vote in the finals of the pain bracket. Make sure you ask your smart device to play podcast Locked On Vikings. Follow the show on Twitter at Locked On Vikings. Follow me on Twitter at Luke Braun NFL. We will probably try to do more mailbag segments like this. Tomorrow's show, we are going to go through the offseason and cap exercise of cutting our beloved Kirk Cousins. Just for fun to see how much damage that would do. And I think that might be a thing all the way up to free agency. Is just the Thursday show. We're going to do a little mock offseason with a new twist. Maybe not. We'll see what kind of stuff comes up over the week, of course. But that will all be tomorrow. And until then, thank you all for listening and skull.